I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If you're one of the thousands who'll make their way to Great Smoky Mountains National Park this holiday weekend, well, spare a moment for any of the seasonal workers you encounter this year. They're not getting a paycheck from Washington. They're getting their money from donations to the park. In many other parks, the number of seasonal workers has simply been cut. If you're planning a trip to Olympic National Park in Washington, keep your wallet handy. Aside from the fee to enter the park itself, there are fees for camping and dumping and parking and hiking. These past few months, there's been quite an argument over America's national parks. Watchdog groups say the cutbacks continue. Washington Parks bureaucrats were tripped up with a leaked memo urging park officials to use words like service level adjustments instead of talking about cutbacks. But the people in charge of the parks say there is more money for national parks than at any time in history. And they report that most of the million or so people who visit the national parks every day say they had a good time. So where's the truth here? Are America's national parks a shame or a showcase? What do you see when you go to the national parks? What's your input in the Ranger's suggestion box? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to start today with Bill Wade. He's the former superintendent of Shenandoah National Park and coordinator of the Coalition of Concerned National Park Service Retirees, joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for asking me to be on the show.
Your people have been pretty outspoken recently, Bill, saying that the parks are in trouble. What's the principal problem here?
We think that the principal problem, quite frankly, is, although later in your show, I understand that you're going to have Assistant Secretary Scarlett on, and as you've led into the show by saying that administration officials contend that there's more money for parks than ever before, that's true on the surface, but it's misrepresented by the fact that our survey recently showed that over 85% of the parks in the system that have their own budget will in fact receive less money this year than they did last year.
How does that work out if there's more money and 85% of the parks are getting less of it?
Well, an example is that while the appropriation that comes down from Congress is larger than it ever has been before, there are things that are siphoned off along the way and mandated things such as Congress passed a 4.1% pay increase this year for all civilian employees, but they only appropriated enough money to cover 25% of that. So the rest of it has to be absorbed by each park that has employees. And so that's one of the things that reduces the amount of money that they actually have available to provide for visitor services and protect resources.
Bill, I wonder if you can help us sort of set up the holiday weekend for people who are taking to the road. You were superintendent of Shenandoah National Park for 9 years, is that right?
That's correct.
So it's a park you know well, the Blue Ridge Mountains, the river, the Skyline Drive.
That's correct, yes.
Have you been back lately?
I have been back several times within the last couple or 3 years, yes.
Can you tell me if you can actually see any physical difference, either for park visitors or how the park's being managed, that lead you to make claims that their parks are actually in greater trouble these days?
Well, in Shenandoah, there will be a couple of things that will be obvious to people as they visit that park this summer, I think, and you alluded to one of them on the lead-in, and that is that because of this decline in the amount of money that's actually reaching parks, Shenandoah, like many other parks, will have fewer temporary summer seasonal employees. Those are the employees that are hired during the peak visitor season to provide visitor interpretive programs, for instance, to carry out custodial maintenance activities such as cleaning picnic areas and campgrounds and pick up the roadside litter. So those things are likely if a person, for instance, has gone up there in the last couple of years and goes up this year, they're just simply likely to see fewer of those employees and they'll see the results of the fact that there are fewer of them.
Now, is this something that's kind of marginal and, you know, everybody's got to tighten their belt? I mean, you're not saying to me that the park's gates are going to be locked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're not talking about real drastic changes here, are we?
We're we're not talking about real drastic changes, but we are talking about changes that will show up for visitors. And more importantly, one of the things that concerns our group is that while the obvious things, such as visitor service kinds of activities, will show some decline, we have as much or a greater concern about those things that might be occurring behind the scenes and that are longer range effects of reduced operations and staffing, such as resource deterioration and those kinds of issues that the visitor might not see, but that are very could be very devastating to the very reason why the parks exist.
Bill, just one last point. Your organization got a lot of national attention earlier this year with a leaked memo. I think was a memo written in February and then leaked in March, where the words service level adjustments then became part of the language of bureaucracy that we were all reading, right?
Yes, that's correct. And that memo was originated in the Northeast Regional Office in Philadelphia and has been attributed largely to that source, although in one sense unfairly so, because the discussion that resulted in that terminology, for instance, came right from the Deputy Director's Office in Washington, D.C. So again, it's another example of where we believe and we have the evidence that there's a concerted effort on the part of the leadership of the National Park Service and the Department of the Interior to mislead or downplay these conditions that are actually existing in parks. And
can you blame them? I mean, if you're going to cut services and you're trying to present, you know, the best face to the public, don't we expect Washington to say, well, yeah, we have to close the visitor centers a couple hours early, but, you know, we're still there for you?
Well, they're not saying that we're cutting the hours of the visitor centers a couple of hours early. They're basically maintaining that everything is fine, that, as Director Minella is now fond of saying, the welcome mat is out and everything is in great shape. And it would be, we believe that the American public would be much more appreciative if they were actually told what the conditions are. And beyond the Washington office saying these sorts of things, there's evidence that there's a concerted effort to mute superintendents and others in parks from being forthright about what the conditions are actually in parks.
Bill, I want to thank you for starting us off on the program today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Bill Wade is a coordinator of the Coalition of Concerned National Park Service Retirees, and as he mentioned earlier in the program, we also have with us Lynn Scarlett. She's the Assistant Secretary of Policy, Management, and Budget at the Department of Interior, the department that oversees the National Park Service. She is in a studio in Washington. Hello, Lynn. Nice of you to come in.
Good to be with you.
And there in the same studio, Ron Tipton, Senior Vice President of the National Parks Conservation Association. It's an advocacy group with a mission to protect and enhance America's national parks. Ron, thanks a lot for coming in as well.
Good morning.
Lynn, let me start with you. You had a chance to listen to Bill's assessment of the national park, saying that people really will be able to see a certain sort of deterioration in both in service and quality in the parks. Would you agree with that?
What I think people will see is some fantastic improvements in the park. You did allude to the fact that this president has put more money into the parks, and by any measure that you put it, by person, by acre, by visitor, there are actually more total numbers of park employees than ever in its history, and those people will be putting out the welcome mat. What folks are going to see are the evidence of some of the 4,000-odd projects that have been underway as part of the president's National Parks Legacy Project. They'll see, for example, places like Lava Bed, where we had an old teetering visitor center right on top of the very delicate lava beds, which is being moved and also refurbished so that people will visit a nice center and it will not be right on top of the delicate lava bed itself. These are the kinds of things that they will see as a result of the tremendous investment, billions of dollars that we've been putting towards addressing a long-standing park maintenance backlog.
But it does seem to me, Lynn, that for every success story that you're able to point to, the watchdog groups are pointing their fingers at other ones. There's a story in the Atlantic Journal-Constitution this morning talking about the rusting cannons in Gettysburg National Military Park, where close to $500,000 was spent to restore them, and then that money ran out, and now they're rusting again. The maintenance chief there is saying that the effort to do the work has been almost useless.
You know, the National Park Service manages about 85 million acres, and they have some 27,000 facilities, thousands of miles of road. When this administration came on board, we actually inherited a very significant and long-standing maintenance backlog. One of the first things I did when I came on was said, okay, where's the list? We've committed to addressing this. And I learned that the Park Service really did not have the management tools in place. It did not know what inventory of facilities it had or what condition they were in. We set about getting that inventory so we'd have the tools to say, where are the problems? How can we set priorities and address them? And that's what we've diligently gone about. This is kind of a journey, not a destination. As you know, managing what's the equivalent of a small city with 20-some thousand employees spread across 388 park units,
challenges. If we can, because when we talk about trying to make sense of exactly where we are on this journey, if that's the way we're going to describe it, Ron, your group came out with a study a few months back called Endangered Rangers, which in many ways contradicts a lot of what we're hearing from Lynn.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I've been involved in the effort to oversee the welfare of the national park since the 1970s. And in fact, helped put stage some congressional hearings almost 30 years ago on this very subject. This is an old problem, and any comments that I make about this should be taken in the context that this isn't this administration's fault, but it's this administration that is the custodian currently. I believe that when you look at the national parks and you go out to the national parks, as I have in recent months, to Mount Rainier, to Shenandoah, to Gettysburg, to Olympic, and to Everglades, you will find that the quality of the service to visitors and the ability of the Park Service to perform their mission to protect parks unimpaired for future generations is declining. And I think the evidence is overwhelming. You can cite statistical evidence. You can go out and visit with parks. You can talk to the park superintendents. We were talking about Shenandoah a few minutes ago. The superintendent of Shenandoah said last fall in a conversation I had with him, I have the money to manage a road here, to manage the Skyline Drive. I don't have the money to manage a national park.
And is he saying that he's making do with less money or less able to manage with this increased money that he's getting?
At the park level, as Bill Wade said earlier, most of the national park units are not getting as much money each year as they got two or three years ago to operate, maintain, and manage the parks and to help the visitor. And that evidence has been presented recently to the House Appropriations Committee when they marked up the Park Service's budget last month. It's very clear. What you're seeing is, as you talk to these superintendents, they have a little less money and they have a little more responsibility, and they keep trying to move the money around. So a lot of parks cut back on their so-called seasonal staff. Some parks reduce the hours of the visitor center. The ABC television special that aired on the national parks on Evening News a few days ago highlighted the fact that visitors are going to Olympic expecting the visitor center to be open fairly long hours in the summer, and it's open short hours. And that matters with a park that gets 3 million visitors a year.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. As Ron Tipton says, this is not a new problem, but it is something that people are talking and writing about. We'd like to hear what you think or what you've seen when you visit the national parks in your area or on your travels. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, and that's how you can get involved in our conversation this hour about the state, the condition of America's national parks on the day before so many people will be heading off to the parks for the first time this summer, and a terrific cast to field your questions this hour. Ron Tipton's with us. He is Senior Vice President of the National Parks Conservation Association. That is an organization that has been around for decades, was in fact set up by the National Park Service as a way of getting feedback. The NPCA is an advocacy organization that works with the Park Service, but is also critical of their methods and their actions. Lynn Scarlett is also with us. She's the Assistant Secretary of Policy, Management, and Budget at the Department of the Interior. That's the department that oversees the Park Service. We're going to Charlottesville, Virginia, and Betty's joining us on the phone from there. Hi, Betty.
Thanks so much. much. I just have to say I love your programming, so I appreciate all you do.
Well, it's nice to have you with us. What are you calling about today? What are you thinking?
Well, my husband and I recently, after a long time wanting to go to the Theodore Roosevelt Memorial, which is an island right near D.C.,
yeah.
Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
And we made the trip, and I have to say we were so terribly disappointed. The memorial could be an absolutely beautiful place for people to go, not only who are interested in history, but are interested in nature. And unfortunately, the whole monument, which is based on the theme of both Roosevelt's words and water, beautiful pools of water, there was no water. The cement is cracking. There's all kinds of dirt. The trails are overgrown with poison ivy. We saw no rangers or anyone in sight. It made us just so sad.
Were you there way off season, Betty? Is that perhaps part of the explanation?
Oh, no, there really is no off season, but we were just there recently in the spring. And there were other visitors there. But it was just, there was a terrible lack of care and maintenance.
Lynn Scarlett, why don't you talk to Betty about what she's seeing?
Yeah, Betty, these are a number of our parks have had some neglect over many, many years, and this is precisely the kind of thing that we're trying to tackle through the President's National Parks Legacy Project. There obviously is still more to be done, and certainly the Teddy Roosevelt Memorial is one place that is on the project list, but we have so far accomplished or are in the process of accomplishing some 4,000 repair projects so that concrete is improved, so that we're fixing wastewater treatment facilities that had broken down, putting up new visitor centers, putting new roofs on buildings, so that as you go across the country, whether it's to Santa Monica National Recreation Area or Lava Beds National Park, or here on the East Coast in Shenandoah and elsewhere, we're seeing a lot of improvements. There is more work to be done. I do want to add one other thing. The superintendents in the 1990s put forward that they really wanted as a top priority an emphasis on natural resources and natural resource protection. And so they launched a natural resource challenge to put both money into science to understand the natural resources and then resource protection. This president has actually cumulatively increased money for that purpose by some $149 million. And hopefully we will begin to see some of the improvements that result from that in the places that you go and visit.
Ron Tipton, help me if you would with a little bit on scale here, though, because some of the reading that I was doing was talking about, I think the word is deferred maintenance, stuff that should have or should be done that's not being done because the money's not there, and that's now reached a level somewhere between $4 and $6 billion for the national parks?
There was an estimate when we came on board that had appeared in a report saying that there was approximately a $4.9 billion maintenance backlog. We came in and attempted to ground truth that. As I noted, there was, it turns out, no inventory and no real condition assessments. But what we did commit to do was to expend $4.9 billion towards addressing the backlog. And that is well underway. That's what those 4,000 projects are all about.
How much have you spent? How much have you spent, Lynn, of the 4.9 that you say you're targeting to deal with?
There are two different buckets, if you will. There's a piece for roads, and the road piece we're spending at the rate of about $165 million a year. We are waiting for the reauthorization of the Transportation Efficiency Act because that money comes out of there. That's about a couple billion dollars worth of backlog that we're hoping, and that the president in his proposal on that Efficiency Act for transportation has committed to addressing.
Let's see if we can get Ron Tipton in here. I'm getting a little bit lost in the way these things are financed. I know, Lynn, that's not all your fault.
Well, it's very simple. There are roads and there are facilities, and we are very much on track to addressing the $4.9 billion backlog for facilities. We've spent over $1 billion so far and done some 4,000 projects. On the road piece, we will be doing a lot of road construction once we get that Transportation Efficiency
Act passed. All right, let's let Ron in here. Ron.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that. It is true that the administration has committed some new money to the parks, but let's examine that a little more closely. The actual promise initially from the administration was that they were going to eliminate the maintenance backlog. We have not eliminated the backlog. In fact, the backlog is probably roughly at the level it was when the Bush administration came to office. Furthermore, with the help of some of our board members, including the former deputy director of the Park Service, we've looked back about 10 years to see how much additional money has been requested and achieved by this administration. And while there has been some, the rate of increase for the National Park Service for its overall budget is lower than it was in the previous 5 years. Furthermore, to answer your listener's question about not seeing any rangers, that's not an unusual circumstance anymore, unfortunately, in the national parks. We put out a keychain that has a little portrait of a ranger on it, and the message on the keychain is, if you don't bring one, you won't see one. And unfortunately, that's the case too often at our national parks.
Let's go out to California. Steve Hayward's been listening in. He is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He writes the Institute's Environmental Policy Outlook and spends some considerable amount of time, taking a look at the situation with America's national parks. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, hi, Dick. Good to be with you.
Tell me what you're thinking as you're listening in on this.
I have to compliment Mr. Wade and Mr. Tipton for being fairly reasonable and restrained in their language. Usually in an election year, you hear such frothy things said about these issues that I always want to say, my God, somebody call Michael Moore and tell him he made the wrong movie. The real scandal is that we're not maintaining all the visitor centers and bathrooms in the national parks. I just think it needs to be put in a little bit of perspective. I've never heard of a government program yet at any level where the leaders of the program didn't say, yep, we've got all the money we want and we're doing everything we possibly want to do. I mean, every day you pick up the paper and you see that we're short of money for Kevlar vests for troops in Iraq. We have paint peeling off the walls of our public schools. We've got potholes on the interstate highways being unfilled and lots of deferred maintenance on other aspects of federal infrastructure. So this strikes me as really a very normal problem. And as I say, to compliment Mr. Wade and Mr. Tipton, they both acknowledge this has been a long-standing problem that goes back quite a long time. And in fact, a quick Nexus search found Mr. Wade making very similar criticisms 10 years ago.
Now help me, though, with where we are now and where we're headed. Because one of the things that you've spoken about in the past is the fee program, where the people who go to the parks pay a little bit of extra money in order to do that. Some people are quite critical of that, saying, hey, my tax dollars are paying for the parks in the first place.
Well, it's very much the same way if you propose charging people to go on freeways. People think the roads are supposed to be free, darn it. The idea has been around for a while, and I'm not really an expert on it, but the idea is, look, principally from a management point of view, it's extremely difficult to get to control adequately of 84 million acres of land. Why not give park managers at individual parks some autonomy and incentive to manage it the way they see fit by allowing them to charge the fees necessary to cover some portion of the cost they see that need doing and allowing them to keep that money there at the park rather than sending it back to Washington where it's going to go through a bureaucratic sausage grinder?
Steve, stay with me for a minute. I'm going to bring Dan into the conversation, who's calling in from Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. You have some experience with financial services in the National Park Service?
Yes, that's right. I was a financial consultant to several national parks about 6 years ago. Most of my time was spent in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Which, I gather, is the most frequently visited park in the country, some 9.3 million visitors a year. It's an incredible number when you think about it. While you're listening to this conversation about whether or not enough money is going to park maintenance, park operation, that sort of thing, what's your own experience? Where can you bring us on this?
Well, to a certain extent, I think both sides of this argument are correct. Mandates that the parks are required to do that have been added on over the years have sucked up so much of the new funding that what's left in net dollars is far less than what the parks have historically ran their parks on.
Do you mean homeland security? That's the one thing that comes to my mind. But are there other things that the parks are doing that they didn't have to do in years past?
You've got, just one example is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, you know, I'm not by any means saying that that's bad legislation. It's just, things like Superintendent Wade mentioned at the beginning of the program. I can't remember the example that he used. Oh, I think it was the pay increase that they only funded 20-25% of. There's so much of that happening, and talking about all the great things that the parks are doing now that your second guest mentioned, I think that's almost 100% a factor of the great people that are working in our parks and how dedicated and how much they're doing with the little that they have.
Steve Hayward, if I can, just a quick last question to you. We are seeing now well over 100,000 volunteers involved in the National Park Services, the FEES programs that we've spoken about, a certain amount of, I hesitate to use the word privatization, but sort of sharing of responsibility for maintenance of campgrounds, and that's a word that some people... Are you happy enough with the state of the national parks and how you see them on into the future?
It's hard to say yes or no to that question. Am I happy enough? I mean, I think we should never be happy enough with things, but I do think we need to think of new models to how to do these things. Simply calling for more money, although maybe more money is necessary, I don't think people think that's always the main answer anymore, and I think we're going to have to think much more creatively about these things in the future, especially as we add more areas to our national parks, which we're still doing, and yeah. As the previous caller said, we're asking the parks to do more kinds of things like homeland security.
All right, Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Steve Hayward there joining us. He's a fellow from the American Enterprise Institute studying the environment and writes the American Enterprise Institute's Environmental Policy Outlook. I want to go back to Ron Tipton, who's with us from our Washington studio, and this study that your organization wrote, Ron, Endangered Rangers. The number that you came up with, if I'm not mistaken, as a shortfall between where the parks are on an annual basis and where they ought to be, something like $600 million. Is that right?
No, that's correct. And we are going to be updating that estimate because that estimate is probably about 2 years old now. But that's based on studies that we did with the Park Service, so-called business plans, in over 60 national parks. And what you find when you look carefully at what the Park Service has as far as budget and staff and resources to manage these parks is, on the average, they have about a one-third shortfall. And that translates into at least a $600 million deficit as far as spending. Now, we've suggested
that over several years. Let me clarify something if I can, Ron. That you say a shortfall. Is that a shortfall between what that park superintendent says he or she would like to run the park at an optimal level, or one-third lower than it used to be in the past? What's your measure there?
It's a shortfall between what the business students that came in as consultants estimated that park needed using accepted standards for maintaining bathrooms, greeting visitors, protecting
right.
resources, and what the park actually has. It's not a wish list.
And so, Lynn Scarlett, are you saying that the Bush administration has the commitment or the wherewithal to make up that difference at all these parks?
You know, we look at the challenge and actually have some question about those figures. I think Steve Hayward hit the nail on the head. Our parks are extensive. We have 270 million visitors a year. 96% of them continue to say they have an outstanding experience. But managing all that is really a challenge, and it does take state-of-the-art management techniques. When we looked at some of the early versions of those business plans that Mr. Tipton mentioned, we looked at them and viewed them primarily as wish lists. They tended to set forth a number of desires that a park manager might have, but they did not set forth management practices whereby those superintendents could address those challenges. And so what we're doing is a multifaceted approach. We're giving new management tools, for example, saving money by doing things different in terms of how we manage our fleet, the vehicles out there. We found that our Park Service had one vehicle for every two people, for mm-hmm. example. They did not have an inventory of facilities. We've given them that inventory. The earlier caller is absolutely right. The Park Service is filled with fantastic and outstanding people, and they're doing a heck of a good job. But doing a good job is about money and about management. And that combination is what we're putting together in this effort, and I think we're making a lot of progress on that front.
Okay, and the measure, Connection listeners, let's face it, the measure is what are you getting out of America's national parks when you go visiting? And you can help us on this program by telling us what you've seen and giving us your own report card on the state of America's national parks. That's why we have our 1-800 number at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, to be part of this conversation as we, at the beginning of this holiday weekend, take a look at the state of national parks. We're going to Acton, Massachusetts next. Anne's joining us now. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Yes, we do use the parks, and I have found that they are very nice and wonderful to go to, but I feel that the parks are losing a source of revenue that they should not, because I think it's too cheap for the passes that we are given.
What's your favorite park, Ann?
What's my favorite park? Oh, dear. Well, I like Yellowstone, I think.
I mean, I only pull it out of
the
air because I'm
like
wondering.
Acadia because it's closer. So
what do you pay for a day there?
No, we have a pass.
Right.
So we have a pass that will keep us in the parks for forever and ever. You know, it's for senior citizens. It costs us $10 for the rest of our lives.
And what are you saying, that they should be charging $100 for that pass?
It should have cost us $100.
And you'd have been happy to pay that?
More than happy.
And what about the people who don't have the $100 and feel like they've been paying for that park all their taxpaying life?
Provision can be made for them. I really do. I think that we're getting a really good deal, and it's too cheap.
Do you give money to the parks as well as the money that you would spend on something like this? Because I know a lot of people donate money to the parks.
We have only donated money as we're leaving the park.
Ann, thanks for your call. I want to go to Ron Tipton here because I'm curious, Ron, in your own research, to know whether or not this is a ticklish area, how much the national parks could and should make in terms of fees that they gather. It's a clear and obvious way of making up some of this shortfall. But what's the real downside?
Well, our organization has supported the fee program, and yet I understand exactly what Ann is saying. And the fact is that a lot of people are probably willing to pay more. The National Park Service gets, I think, around $150 million a year from this fee program right now, and it's a great stopgap to deal with these shortfalls. I do believe, however, we want to be very, very aware of avoiding the fact that the public is priced out of the parks. That is, the public that cannot afford to visit their local park and spend $10 or $20 on one visit. I think we do have to come up with creative ways to allow people of all types, from all economic strata, from all of America, to enjoy the parks.
All right, Connection listeners, what are you seeing through the lenses of your cameras visiting America's national parks? What does it look like? Are the conditions satisfactory, adequate? Are you a part of that 96% that the government says is giving the parks a good rating? Or do you have another idea? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK for you to join our conversation about the state of national parks. There is a debate underway, and you've heard a little bit about it in terms of where the money's coming from and how much money is being spent on the parks. But the ultimate test, everyone will agree, is how much you enjoy spending time in the parks and whether or not you're enjoying the parks as much as you used to or as much as you think you should. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, next, and Dick's on the line. Dick, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
My wife and I just got back from vacation from Gatlinburg, Tennessee, up in that area, and we brought my two boys with us. They're 9 and 13, and we've been explaining to them the national parks and how it's a heritage to the United States. No other country really has that sort of thing, and I hope that the government will continue to fund this and help us keep it up, because it's something that we really don't need to lose. When we go on vacation, that's exactly where we head. Later on this summer, we'll probably be going out toward Yellowstone and that area, providing the gas prices aren't too high. But whatever kind of lobbying or pleading or whatever that we need to do it to keep up with this system and to preserve it for our children.
When you were east, did you get into any of the parks? Were you in Smoky Mountains, for example? Or?
Oh, yes, sir. That's exactly where we went. Our children got off in those mountain streams and played, and they found a big chunk of quartz, for example, that's as big as a basketball, that's just seamed with gold. It's, of course, iron pyrite, but for kids it was an experience for them. They thought they found a giant gold nugget.
How was the park? Just the state of the park, the roads, the visitor center, stuff like that. Give us your taxpayer's assessment.
It was fantastic. Crowded, and of course it rained on us every day, but we still enjoyed it. The parks were immaculate. Once we got up that way, we didn't see any paper, no beer cans, Coke cans. Of course, here in Baton Rouge, it's like a dump, you know. No one cares down here anymore, but the parks, it was just like a breath of fresh air.
Ron Tipton, that's a pretty good review from Dick there.
Well, that's a great review, and that's it's just a great example of how Americans love our parks. And by the way, all the early reports are that for the major parks, such as the Great Smokies, the visitor numbers seem to be going back up again. I would just make one comment. We did a recent report on the state of the condition of park resources at Great Smokies, and the fact is it's a magnificent park, but it's got some serious problems. I mean, the air quality at Great Smokies is as bad as it is in downtown Atlanta much of the year. It has the largest collection of historic log structures in North America, and many of those buildings are in a very serious state of disrepair. So it's a great park. The Park Service does a great job with limited resources, but they need more.
1-800-423-8255. Dick, thanks a lot for that call. We're going next to Framingham, Massachusetts, and Peter's on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm surprised to learn of Bush's increased funding for the parks. I remember he promised on the campaign trail in 2000 to do this and was criticized afterwards for not following through. He also has a track record of taking credit for other people's accomplishments, like when he took credit for the Children's Health Initiative in Texas. So I'm wondering, first, who really pushed through this funding? And second, we have record levels of funding for the parks right now, and yet it seems that it's not actually reaching the parks. So I'm wondering where exactly this funding is going.
Do you base that observation on any of your own visits to the park, Peter, just before I turn it back to Washington?
I haven't been to a national park in a couple of years, so I really can't say that. I do recall reading last year about someone who went to the Grand Canyon National Park and found on sale in the visitor center creationist literature explaining the formation of the canyon through creationism rather than science. And I know that Bush is not...
Well, without a sort of firsthand grip on that, we should probably stick with your earlier point. And I know from looking through my notes, Lynn, that the president said quite specifically, my administration will restore and renew American national parks. He said that 3 years ago in the Everglades. He's also reiterated that in the State of the Union speech. What's the impact, tell me, if you would, of Homeland Security on park maintenance? When I was trying to make some sense of that, really the only one I could come up with example was the Statue of Liberty, where a considerable amount of money had to be spent. What's the effect of that on other money available within the parks?
Well, of course, as I have said, overall the monies available to the parks, whether for operations or construction, are up. After 9/11, we had to take a real close look at national security issues as they relate to parks and our icons to make sure that we preserve those and keep them in good condition for the future of all Americans, as that earlier caller said. We have had to do two kinds of things to address the challenges of presented by Homeland Security. One is, of course, to protect our icons, and we've seen work underway at the Statue of Liberty, also at the Washington Monument, and several of the other very high visibility icons.
And that is park money, right?
That is park money, that's correct. But money, by the way, dedicated specially for that purpose and asked for by the president and appropriated for that purpose. In addition, we also have expanded the numbers of park rangers, law enforcement, for example, on borders. We have a number of parks that are right along the border. And so it's important to keep both visitors and employees secure, and consequently we've had some significant increases in our budget for those purposes. That has been accompanied, however, by dollars to go for visitor services such as natural resource protection, visitor center improvements, and these 4,000 projects that I have mentioned that are underway across our many, many parks.
All right. To Raleigh, North Carolina, Richard's joining us on the line. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir. Yes, I was calling in. I was listening to your discussion about the Park Service, and I'm somewhat familiar with the Blue Ridge Parkway. I grew up in Haywood County in North Carolina, which the Blue Ridge Parkway also travels through.
Lucky you.
And I've been around the Blue Ridge Parkway for the better part of almost 50 years. I'm 64 now. And I have been really disdained in the way that the maintenance in the parkway for the past appears to be 15 to 20 years has declined, too. I think the conditions are somewhat deplorable when you look at the I think the water ditches not being cleaned, and of course you don't have the personnel anymore on the parkway. You don't have the day-to-day maintenance. You don't have the parkway, the rangers to protect it. And I am just real concerned about our Blue Ridge Parkway, both the North Carolina and Virginia. I'm familiar with the Virginia branch also, and I just see them going down, and they do not have the people to do day-to-day maintenance. And I know I ran a business. You can't get that from doing contracts. So I really am really concerned about our Blue Ridge Parkway, what in the next 20 to 30 years, how it will deteriorate and what it'll deteriorate to.
The point I think that you're making, Richard, don't let me put words in your mouth, is that, you know, you've seen the state of the parkway go down, but your principal concern is if it's allowed to go much further, then there's really going to be a significant price to pay.
I think if it goes much farther, that it will cost us into the billions of dollars to restore it as it was 30 years ago.
I thank you for your call, and I want to go to Ron Tipton here, because, Ron, in your own assessment of the parks, I suspect that what Richard's saying is largely what you're trying to draw people's attention to, that while they can drive on the parkway or they can walk on the trails, the work that's not being done is building up to a state where things might get a whole lot worse in years to come?
I couldn't agree more with our caller from North Carolina. I'm a huge fan of the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's probably one of the most beautiful long drive in the eastern United States. And what he's saying about the Blue Ridge Parkway is what we're hearing from people that visit parks like the Blue Ridge Parkway, like Everglades, like Shenandoah, like the Grand Canyon, that visit them regularly and over a long period of time. They're not seeing as many employees, and they're seeing the conditions deteriorate. Recently, the superintendent at Gettysburg National Military Park, our most visited Civil War memorial, said, "I cannot guarantee the quality of the visitor experience anymore because we don't have the budget or the staff."
Which is, I mean, the quality of the visitor experience, then that's your number one concern.
Absolutely. We want our visitors to have an outstanding experience, and this is exactly why the kinds of things that you've heard described are exactly why this president launched his National Parks
Legacy. Hang on a second.
Project.
We were just listening to a superintendent being quoted saying that he wasn't able to guarantee the visitor quality of his park.
What we have is a significant work in progress that will take a number of years to address. We've committed over $5 billion, and in fact a doubling of the road budget for the parks precisely to address the Blue Ridge Parkway issues that were just described. This is what the National Parks Legacy Project is all about, by golly, addressing these long-standing and accumulating challenges. I do want to add, though, that we do have 20,000 folks, that is, employees, working for the Park Service. That's more than ever in its history. One of our challenges is also, as we hear some of these problems still, how do we best utilize those folks that they really are meeting the needs of the public that's out there asking for services?
Let's go back to the people who are paying their salaries, to Foxborough, Massachusetts. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. I've visited five national parks in the last 2 years, and I'd give you an outline of what I thought, if you want me to describe them all briefly.
You'll have to be quick. Can you do that for us?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you the five parks I went to. I went to Everglades, Yellowstone, Grand Teton, Shenandoah, and Arcadia. And the only ones that I saw discrepancies in, I think, were Everglades. I thought the visitor center was kind of run down. We just got back from Arcadia the day before yesterday, and the picnic area was looked like the grass hadn't been mowed since last year. And the picnic area was kind of run down. As far as the visitor center went, it seemed well-staffed, and everything else in the park seemed fine.
And so you're sort of giving the parks a mixed review, fair enough?
That's correct, yeah. I think Yellowstone was fine. The last time we were at Yellowstone was in 89, and I didn't see any difference. Grand Teton, the area around the visitor center seemed a little lacking in maintenance, I thought, you know, but other than that, it seems more exterior than interior.
Can I ask you, though, Michael, when you're in the parks and noticing these things? I mean, I might make the same observation about my neighbor, that I wish he would do a better job cleaning up his backyard. But we're not talking about houses on the street. We're talking about the country's national parks.
Right.
How important is it in your mind that people don't come back from the parks and say things are looking a little scruffy there?
Well, I thought it was important because a group of us used the picnic area a couple of times, and it was a little depressing to see it so run down in Arcadia.
Lynn Scarlett, do you want to talk to Michael here?
Yes, Michael, I appreciate your thoughts, and really great that you go and visit all those parks because they are wonderful, wonderful heritages for America. You know, again, we have 388 national parks. It's a big job, and our supervisors and superintendents really do have a big job out there. We do need to provide them those resources to get the job done, and we're doing that. We need to provide them management tools, and also we're attracting an awful lot of volunteers who want to come in and help with trail maintenance. It gives them a tight and close connection to the parks. So there's a lot of ways that we can really invest in our parks and make them the grand places that the Americans want them to be.
Quick last question,
I think we're making a lot of progress on that front.
To Ron Tipton, I know in your own experience with listening to how people relate to the parks, Ron, that you have a good fix on how important these parks are to people. But do you have a sense that politicians in Washington from both parties are as aware of how important the parks are to people?
I would say my first point on that, my answer would be that this is a bipartisan issue in Congress, and there are many Republican leaders in Congress that care deeply about the national parks. I think sometimes the people that appropriate the money look at the raw figures and don't see the real problems. And I think they're starting to understand now that the fact is that these superintendents at these popular parks are managing shortfalls and that the situation is getting worse and worse every day and that something dramatic needs to happen. I think sometimes you've got to bring these vivid examples, you know, to the media and straight to the appropriations committees and to Congress for them to understand what's necessary.
All right, and our listeners will do that for their congressional representatives when they head to the highways this weekend. I want to thank my guests for being with me on the program as we talked about the state of America's national parks. Ron Tipton is Senior Vice President of the National Parks Conservation Association. Lynn Scarlett is Assistant Secretary of Policy, Management, and Budget at the Department of the Interior. Earlier in the program, we talked with Bill Wade, Coordinator of the Coalition of Concerned National Park Service Retirees, and Steve Hayward at the American Enterprise Institute. Our program is produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Rosso, and Doug Sugarts. We had help today from Mike Toda. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.